This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a sneak peek at an upcoming contemporary ballet season in the Marigny, or an immersive tricentennial art installation that takes you through the city's history. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Marigny Opera House, also known as the Church of the Arts, turns 7 this year. It's home to the Marigny Opera Ballet, and it's an exciting time for co-founder and executive director Dave Hurlbert. He's gearing up for the 2018-19 ballet season and joins us now with a sneak peek. Dave, welcome back.
Thanks, Diane.
Did you have any idea 7 years ago when you purchased the former Holy Trinity Catholic Church that you were on the cutting edge of a post-Katrina arts trend in converting houses of worship into art spaces?
No, I did not. That didn't go through my mind. We got the church, Old Holy Trinity Church, to save it. We understood it was going to be pulled down or converted into private use of some type. So the goal from the beginning 7 years ago was to save the building and to make any necessary repairs to it. The idea of starting the Marigny Opera House Foundation, which supports local artists, didn't come right away. We got that vision several months after getting the building and initiating some pretty necessary repairs. What happened was the New Orleans Fringe Festival that year approached us right after we got the building and asked if they could perform during the upcoming Fringe Festival. It was November, 7 years ago. And I couldn't believe that anyone wanted to perform in that space. We didn't yet have electricity or plumbing. The repairs weren't completed. There were holes in the floor, the walls, the ceiling. We'd just gotten rid of the termites, mostly, and yet they wanted to perform in there. So I said, sure. And it was that demonstrated to me what the building wanted to be. I remember the opening night, and there were people in the church. They had a power generator. I could see lights in the windows. I could hear families in there enjoying performances. I could hear live music. And it brought the neighborhood to life. And it seemed to make so many people happy. It made me happy that night. I was walking around outside the church just listening to it outside. And it occurred to me, this is what the building should be. This is what the building was built to do. This is what it should be, a gathering place. It should be a community place. And I knew that at the time, certainly, there weren't enough venues for performing artists. I thought that the Marigny Opera House, if we continued to repair it and put it into good shape, could serve as an additional resource for all of the city's classical musicians, jazz musicians, dancers, songwriters, puppeteers, actors. That was my vision. And boy, that vision came true right away. I think as soon as we opened the doors, the artists came. And 7 years on, they're still there.
The Marigny Opera House is home to a wide array of performances and events. It even hosted a major celebrity wedding back in the day that created quite a buzz.
Yes, Solange Knowles was married at the Marigny Opera House a while back.
This is Beyoncé's sister?
This is the sister of Beyoncé, who was there at the wedding. It was a celebrity wedding. I was taken by surprise a bit with the scope and the magnitude of that wedding. Solange had been coming to our dance events and to some recitals. I knew who she was. And after one of the recitals, she came up and said that she and her fiancé wanted to get married at the Marigny Opera House. I thought that was great. I was delighted to have, you know, a devoted fan of the Opera House being married there. And I guess in my mind, I had sort of a cozy wedding ceremony that I was thinking of, but it was not. It was it was international news. And I think that was the first time a lot of people around the world ever heard of the Marigny Opera House.
Fast forward to this year, 2018. It was a banner one for the ballet at Gambit's Classical Arts Awards.
It sure was. I was taken by surprise. I was hoping that we might win an award. We were nominated for a number of things. But I guess my tip-off should have been, you know, we usually have a table towards the back of the room. And when we walked in, the Opera House table was right at the front. And I thought they'd made a mistake. So anyway, we sat at our table and we won a lot of awards. We kept going up and back and up and back with Gambit Awards for the Marigny Opera Ballet. It was one of the best days of my life.
What would you say is your biggest contribution to the cultural community?
I'm hoping my biggest contribution will be in the future. My goal is to continue what I'm doing and to get even better at what I'm doing. I think to date, the biggest contribution is simply opening the doors of that church and making a home for our local performing artists. I believe last year there were around 300 local performing artists performing at the Marigny Opera House. And most of those performances were donation-based. We invited the world in to see these performers. And that's got to be a big contribution.
And you're about to open your fifth season. What can we look forward to?
We're doing three programs next season. Program one is a full-length premiere. It's called The Follies of 1915. It's a full-length comedy based on Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, except that it's set in 1915 and in New Orleans. The music is going to be provided by the New Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. They're a well-known local group that specializes in music of that period. Fortunately, the music of that period, and why we selected 1915 as a year, is that is when a dance craze swept America. There's been nothing like it ever since. Everyone was taking dancing lessons. That is when the foxtrot, Latin American dances, all were introduced, demonstrated by Vernon and Irene Castle. It was a very exciting time. It was a period of ragtime, period of early jazz, period of operetta, a very rich musical tradition. And we're pulling all of that in, sort of the inspiration for this ballet. Our second program is going to be in January. We're going to present two half-hour ballets, both of them premieres. One of them is called Querelle, which is based on a novel by French novelist Jean Genet. It is about a drug-dealing, murderous sailor in the port of Brest in France in the 40s. It's set in a bordello, and the new music that we've commissioned is by Byron Asher. It'll be for chamber orchestra. We're following that with Pierrot Lunaire. The music is by Arnold Schoenberg. It's quite a classic from the early 20th century. It'll be sung by local mezzo Phyllis Tregel and accompanied by the New Resonance Chamber Orchestra. That's going to be choreographed by Rebecca Allen. It's a contemporary ballet based on the Commedia dell'arte. Pierrot, Harlequin, Columbine. For program three, which will end our season in March, we're going to perform The Book of Saints again. The Book of Saints premiered over a year ago to great acclaim. That's our full-length ballet that's based on the lives of Francis of Assisi, Teresa of Avila, and Saint Sebastian the Martyr. And the music is by the Cru de Voix Choral Ensemble and the New Resonance Chamber Orchestra. So it's a very big musical piece as well.
Wow, that's quite a season, quite a lot to look forward to. And in looking forward, Dave, what is your vision for the future of the ballet and the Marigny Opera House?
My vision for the Marigny Opera Ballet is that we will continue to make surprising progress in our artistry, in our technique, in our repertoire, and that we will actually tour. I think we've been performing all this time at the church. It's time for us to go to audiences. we're already putting plans into place to try to start with regional touring around the Gulf Coast. We'd like to perform in festivals. My vision for the Marigny Opera House as a whole is that we will continue to keep our doors open and we will present even more local performing artists. It seems that we've been doing an average of 2.5 concerts or recitals every week. I think we can do even more. It's a great source of satisfaction following these young artists in their careers and the excitement of what they do.
Marigny Opera Ballet Executive Director Dave Hilbert, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The Marigny Opera Ballet opens its fifth season in November. More info is online at marignyoperahouse.org. In the interest of full disclosure, I am a member of the Marigny Opera House Foundation Board. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A tricentennial exhibit at Tulane's Newcomb Art Museum says happy birthday to New Orleans in a unique way through Tulane's archives. The immersive art installation by Los Angeles-based artist Fallen Fruit is called Empire. Museum curator Laura Blero and communications director Marion Taylor are here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So when I think of the word empire, what comes to mind is a government under an emperor or an empress. How does the word relate to this art installation?
This is Laura. I think New Orleans is a very specific empire, right? In relationship to how Louisiana became part of the United States, we really have a lot of wonderful artifacts that are in the collection at Tulane in the form of legal documents signed by people like C.C. Claiborne. We also have portraits and paintings of political figures. The story of empire is also related to culture and how we've kind of colonized the rest of the world with what we do because it's so fun here. So we have a lot of musicians and portraits of them and artifacts of the places where they played music as well in the show. And a really compelling story about women and that story, very unique here in the South too.
This is Miriam. The French, the Spanish, British American, there were just so many different cultures that contributed to New Orleans, the Caribbean as well. And on display, you'll see all of these various stories and just different histories that sometimes are overlooked or sometimes maybe misunderstood.
There's definitely a lot of struggling stories too, right? It hasn't been an easy governance or empire here.
Yeah. How did the idea for the exhibit come about?
Well, the artists were invited to New Orleans actually in part with Pelican Bomb, a local organization that promotes arts criticism. Fallen Fruit is here also, you know, doing a public artwork that has 300 trees planted throughout New Orleans for the tricentennial. So since they were already in New Orleans working on that project for which they received an NEA grant, the artists were invited to investigate the archives of Tulane and to look at the New Orleans tricentennial through that lens. And so they've essentially behaved like curators in some way. And they've created these installations where they've mined 10 different collections across campus. And they used this opportunity while they were in New Orleans anyway to really get to know the city.
Tell us more about the artists behind the art collaboration, Fallen Fruit. Who are they?
Austin Young is originally from Nevada, and David Burns is from Los Angeles, and that's where the two guys are based presently. The artists are also exhibiting internationally. We're really lucky to have them here in New Orleans.
Part of their idea where they get this name Fallen Fruit is they think of fruit as an object that tells the story of a culture without really having any type of narrative with it.
And that begs the question, how do you put all of that into one exhibit?
Well, I guess one of the unifying aspects of the exhibition visually would be the wallpaper. So the artists created a design that's really dazzling, this beautiful wallpaper. They've done three different designs for individual rooms in the show, and that provides a cohesiveness for what is sort of a encyclopedic display of sorts. I mean, it's a kind of a crowdsourced show in some ways, and there are operations of chance sort of at play as well when someone walks through the exhibition. It's so densely packed with objects. We have 400 pieces on display. We have little vitrines with tiny objects like jewelry, Mardi Gras costumes and things as well. So it's really a grab bag in a lot of ways, but the wallpaper has this unifying component that architecturally holds everything together.
Wow. Yeah. They think of it as an immersive installation. So each room has kind of its own theme. And at first, you just want to walk in and be a little bit overwhelmed. And then you take a deeper dive. It definitely merits more than one visit.
Take us on a tour.
We have four different rooms in the space, and the artists have kind of created titles for each of those rooms. One's divided by gender, just as the school historically had been. You have the men's room and the women's room. And then we also have the Empire Room. The first entryway is the gateway to cultural mythology. That's very thoughtful about who's telling the stories of history.
One of those themes in the men's room, you're dealing a lot of traditional ideas of power and how they've played out in New Orleans and at the university. Then while in the women's room, there's this idea of fantasy and myth. It's where the entire wallpaper is covered in carnival illustrations, as well as kind of this idea of public and private persona. We have the personal collection of Josephine Newcomb on display there. And then in the Empire Room, which is the back, it's really interesting. You'll have objects that we would not typically display. So we have some that are damaged from Katrina. They want to show that we have these. So a lot of this is as if you're walking into an archive. They use archival shelving. They've used archival materials and cases. So you're kind of getting a behind-the-scenes look at the way things operate at Tulane and at Newcomb.
It's curious that it doesn't follow a chronological timeline.
You have things from every era.
It's completely nonlinear in its structure, and we have soundtracks in three of the rooms, and it's a bit of chance as to when the audience, you know, walks in and what they see and what their connections are visually and audibly through those things they're experiencing all together.
And that's an intention by the artist. They like this idea of a kaleidoscope, and they like the idea that part of the artwork is the public's interaction with it.
How are they grouped?
Well, we have some of the objects divided across gender, other pieces that might be more cartoony that are all put together in one room. Like we have reproductions of John Chase's illustrations. He was such an important historian and captured a lot of New Orleans history. So we have illustrations related to that juxtaposed with images of mausoleums and buildings and architectural renderings. So there's kind of this fantasy world that's created, but also it's historically relevant.
And what you'll see is that there aren't labels on the wall, and the artists wanted to do that because they wanted to give equal weight to all the objects. So you might have a portrait of Paul Tulane, but it's next to an unknown artist. And it's really so that people can come in and interpret it how they want to. We have all different types of ephemera. The Louisiana Research Collection has a great ephemera of LGBT history of New Orleans. That's next to these great ERA buttons that are all about the Equal Rights Amendments. And so there's all these different tidbits that if you look into one vitrine, you're like, oh, I didn't even know this existed or this happened here. So there's all these little nice moments that happen throughout the show.
Yeah, and there's some artifacts that might be grouped along the themes of New Spain and colonization or interpretations of Spanish conquests. It's very much a show that is so deep and complex in its juxtapositions. Like some of the combinations make sense after you see it and might at first be a little odd.
How is the issue of slavery addressed
We actually have a bill of sale from 1788 that's on display and juxtaposed with actually a contemporary document in which an artist is talking about universal rights.
As we look back on 300 years, how does an exhibit like this one prepare us to move forward as a city?
I think it presents a lot of difficult material, actually, and it asks us to look at these primary objects and to make up our own minds about what they mean and the significance. So it's really promoting new research and taking another look at what these objects represent.
Louisiana Research Collection is going back, and if we haven't told the story of a certain group or a certain demographic, it's trying to correct that and go back in, and I think that it merits a city to do that as well.
Museum curator Laura Blairow and communications director Miriam Taylor, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much for having us, Miriam.
Thanks.
Newcomb Art Museum presents Empire, an art installation telling the story of New Orleans through the archives of Tulane. The exhibit will be on view through December 22nd. More info is online at newcombartmuseum.tulane.edu. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellis Foundation and from Christwood Retirement Center in Covington. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45. When we'll go inside the arts, I'm Diane Mack.